At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're going to bring in my great friend, Senator Kevin Cramer, from the great state of North Dakota. We're going to talk about every darn thing, Senator. Welcome back. Before we get to the bad stuff, you know, banks failing and taxes rising and all the rest of that,
right.
I want to talk about a wonderful thing. Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, unveiled H.R. 1, the Lower Energy Costs Act. This is something that I had been pushing for months and months and months. Every time somebody came on, I'd talk about H.R. 1, open the spigots, reopen the spigots, permitting. And sure enough, they've gone ahead and done it. It is going to be H.R. 1. He invited me down. We did our entire show from the Rayburn Room in the Capitol. And my first guest, of course, was Kevin McCarthy, who unveiled this thing. And really, it does exactly what you want and I want, increasing American energy, critical minerals, streamlining the infrastructure, broad permitting reform. I mean, this has the one federal agency. This has the NEPA reforms that Trump put together that we all worked on, but that Biden reversed. It's absolutely splendid. And, you know, it's a compilation of several bills put together by related committee chairs. I mean, it really is. I mean, I got a big charge out of it. Kevin and I sat. They set us up, Senator. They set us up in the Rayburn Room, these little chairs. But the Fox people, you know, they put together, you know, sort of like a paper mache teleprompter and other things that you have to have.
Yes.
Brought in a makeup lady to throw some powder on her faces. And
sure.
McCarthy was great. I was scrunched in this horrible chair. My bad back was killing me, but Kevin looked great.
Well, the only thing he didn't do is name it after you. I mean, my gosh, what's so funny is not only are these all of the ideas that you and several others have been talking about for a long time, and you actually were doing when you were in the White House helping President Trump, but even gave it to H.R. 1, which you'd been calling for.
Yeah.
And why not, Larry? I mean, why not? Because this one thing, now granted it's a lot of things, but this one issue of American-made energy is key to everything else in the economy. It's key to productivity. It's key to revenue generation. It's key to jobs creation. It's key to national security. And, you know, I love how – well, I know we'll probably talk about Jay Powell here eventually, but you know, I love how he always likes to refer to core inflation, which of course takes out the most important inflationary driver, I think, in the menu, and that is energy costs, because energy is used in literally everything, obviously. And if it's not used to create it or produce it, it's used to move it, and whatever we're producing. So why not have it be HR 1? It also draws a beautiful contrast between a successful, economic policy and a failed economic policy. And then to have it come out roughly the same time as the president's budget even further draws that contrast. Kudos to the speaker and to Kathy McMorris Rogers, who chairs the Energy and Commerce Committee, and the whole team over at the House that put this together and is laying it all out there now, Larry, for us to talk about and everybody to see.
I mean, H.R. 1 now, I think, is the absolute most important policy for ending inflation and restoring growth. That's how important. I have felt this all along. That's why I wanted it to be H.R. 1.
Yep.
Occasionally on the air, I will read a partial list. Like refined petroleum products permeate the entire economy. I mean, it's like two, 300 areas. Almost everything we do has petroleum in it. And, you know, and the Bidens want to stop that. And you have to restore that. And then if we produce more, as you know, from the Bakken and so forth, it'll be cheaper. I mean, it's going to be cheaper. And that's going to allow everybody to afford what they need to afford. And by the way, it helps. H.R. 1 helps the greenies because, right, in a way, right, it goes back to NEPA reform, National Environmental Policy Act reform, and the one federal, whatever it's called, one federal agency. The point is, it won't take 10 years. You can get a permit to do something in a year or two. And that includes minerals, right, like up in Minnesota, the Iron Range.
That's right.
Which has all that stuff, lithium and nickel. You know more about this than I do.
No, that's for sure. The Iron Range of Minnesota, Alaska, the Pebble Mine up in Alaska. Obviously, places in our desert southwest have a lot of these same things. All of these are things that we've acquiesced when we transferred our guilt. And by the way, got you know, hung up on cheap stuff. We, as Americans, we thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get a whole bunch of cheap uranium from places like Russia instead of the United States, and minerals from China instead of the United States, and it would cost less. The problem is that we just enslaved ourselves to adversaries instead of our friends in our own country. But and to your point, we mine much cleaner than any other country mines. We don't use child labor. If we should be doing business with our friends, not our enemies. And we would clean up the environment while we're also creating jobs and wealth and bringing the cost of things down ultimately. Because as you know, when you produce something on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, the other side of the Pacific Ocean, you're shipping it, and you just literally raise all boats of the economy rather than picking and choosing. So, no, kudos again that they really nailed it. And now what we need to do, Larry, is do exactly what you and I are doing this morning. That's talk about it. Talk about it, talk about it, talk about it, and demonstrate to the American people who maybe don't pay a lot of attention. They pay attention to the price of gasoline as it's going into the tank, and they pay attention to their own budget as they see, food and fuel taking up a bigger chunk of it, which means they have to make a determination what they're going to spend their next priority on. And oftentimes that creates a lot of stress. So, no, we just need to be talking about it. And I'm glad it's H.R. 1.
You can get this through the Senate. You might.
It's an interesting point. So you raised the point of the greenies, right? So one of the reasons permitting reform has some value is for that very reason, is that guess what they're finding out about offshore wind siting? Guess what they're finding out about solar panel farms? And guess what they're finding out? That the same rules that they've used to keep oil in the ground are being used against them permit anything. And by the way, same with roads. My gosh, we have this gigantic infrastructure bill with all this money to build out our supply chain infrastructure, and suddenly the cost of it all goes up because Pete Buttigieg goes and he basically ignores the one agency rule, which we put into that law, by the way. And they use the agencies themselves, the bureaucracy themselves, in concert with their activist friends on the left, put up guidance and memos and rulemakings and whatnot to try to keep all that stuff, from actually being implemented. Now, we've been winning some of those fights. We've won some in the courts. The courts have sent a signal to the bureaucracy. Nope. We're no longer going to allow you to put into rules things that the legislature did not put into the laws. And good for Donald Trump again for helping work with Mitch McConnell to create a Supreme Court that understands that what we didn't say in a bill doesn't mean you get to say it in a law. I think you're right. I think we can make a case. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to accept the H.R. 1 as is. But in some of these areas, like permitting reform, to your point, I do think there's some room for some common ground, a little bit of compromise, and a victory for everybody. I reject the notion that every transaction in Washington requires a loser. We can have winners all the way around if we're willing to work together.
You know, the permitting aspects of this, and Kevin McCarthy and I went back and forth because I went into this, much, much better than the Senate stuff. Much better than Manchin. I never know everything that came out of who's a what'sie from West Virginia's bill, but this is broad-based stuff.
Capital.
This is broad-based permitting and would open the door to solar, to wind, to battery minerals, to oil and gas, to pipelines, right? Keystone, Willow.
Yes.
I mean, it's a revolution. I mean, it just is an absolute revolution. And the you know what? If you'd get back to 14, 15 million barrels a day, we were on pace to do that, you know, you'd be talking $2 a gallon gasoline. But again, every one of these, you know, from your clothing to your eyeglasses to your stethoscopes, all this stuff that refined petroleum is used in our daily lives. Toothpaste, by the way. Anyway, the point is that cost would go down.
It would. And I think that's right. And the thing about the Manchin experience, and this, you know, I was up to my eyeballs in it because the issue that the left is pushing so hard is to be able to, first of all, give more federal authority to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission when it comes to siting transmission lines, electric transmission lines. And the reason that's so important to the left is because they want to be able to site every little localized project, put up transmission lines, whether the transmission lines have any value to the greater good. In other words, the region, the regional grid or the national grid, and then allocate those costs to everybody. And that was that's a really fundamental problem for for any pro-market solution, which our whole system, by the way, of electricity is built around a cooperative federalism model. Mm-hmm. If we can fix that piece, because remember, these transmission lines can't get sited or permitted any easier than an oil pipeline can. But in their law, they were making it easier to do that, but not a lot easier to do other things like oil pipelines, other than the gas pipeline in West Virginia, which is really what the whole bill was frankly all about.
Oh, yes. Wait, just one 10 seconds, Senator, before we take a quick break and come back.
Sure.
Would this be 51 votes in the Senate? It wouldn't be 60, would it?
It would be 60 if it was the whole package as it is. Now, we're never going to have a budget reconciliation package in a divided government. So, yeah, anything that we would pass would require 60. But, again, here's what I look for. How can we get – instead of looking for how you get 51 lefties and then coerce 9 Republicans into a mediocre package, which would have a hard time passing in the House, why don't we figure out a way to get 30 reasonable Republicans and 30 reasonable Democrats to agree on something, and maybe we'd get 35 of each. This notion that we always have to go to the extreme on the majority side and then sort of drag a few souls with, let's not do it that way. Let's take a look at Kevin's bill. I think it's great. I think there's opportunity there to be had, and just find a way to get a good big bill done that may not be everything you and I would agree to, but at least it would be closer.
All right, quick break. Senator Kevin Cramer, North Dakota. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back, folks.
Larry Kudlow.
Larry Kudlow, we are here talking life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness with North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer. And let's shift over into Joe Biden's budget, which Ted Cruz says was written by Bernie Sanders, which I think probably was right. $5 trillion.
Well, it certainly reflects him, yeah.
$5 trillion in taxes, Senator. $5 trillion. By the by, what hasn't been given much attention is massive spending. There's a whole laundry list of spending. You know, this thing is not about deficit reduction. This is about taxing successful people in order to build a bigger social welfare state. That's what this is about.
Well, and by taxing more people, it will create a welfare state by creating a lot more welfare need, as opposed to creating wealth, which leads to jobs, which means we should need less welfare, because welfare, the best welfare program is a job and wealth creation. There are so many things in this budget, just on the surface, Larry, that bother me, but perhaps one of the biggest things is the how much the public held debt as a percentage of GDP would be a brand new record, not since World War II. Now, that speaks both to the deficit problem and debt problem as well as the productivity problem. And so I just, for the life of me, why we don't want to get people back to work create more job opportunities, more productivity. You know, even in some of the recent somewhat good news relating to workforce issues now, there's still a productivity problem. For whatever reason, Americans are less productive collectively and individually. And as you know, a great big country like ours, with a great big economy like ours, with the leadership, global leadership that we provide, we need to be as productive as we can be, and we have lots of opportunity to do it. But raising taxes and borrowing more money and higher regulations works against all of those.
Well, I'm looking at this. Spending would be 25% of GDP. The 50-year baseline average there is 20 to 21% of GDP. So they would bring it up to 25%. Deficits would wind up being, at the end of 10 years, 6% of GDP. Yeah, and debt as a percent of GDP would be 117% at the end of this thing. 117%. So, you know, I'm proud of them. I mean, what they've done here is absolutely, this is the most left-wing budget I have ever seen. And I know it's dead on arrival, thankfully. I mean,
thankfully it is, but it does identify the culprits here. If people pay attention, and again, if we talk about it, I think we have to do some talking about it and reveal the nonsense in all of this. Because if you're just sort of reading the headlines, you might go, "Oh, gee whiz, that's a lot of the nice important priorities." Until you start drilling down and helping people understand what it means when you have low productivity and high debt, or you know, the debt to GDP ratio, it's just outlandish and works against the very things you and I talk about all the time, the things you talk about every day on your television show, and that is how to put people back to work, and give them a job rather than a welfare check.
There's no workfare or work requirements. Right. In fact, let me read you some of the stuff on the spending side. $430 billion child tax credit, $155 billion expanded earned income tax credit, $325 billion paid family and medical leave, $600 billion universal preschool, $200 billion secondary education, couple of hundred billion more for Obamacare subsidies. Now, not one of this stuff, not one thing is paid for, but the point is, not one of these welfare programs, and we could go on and on. The list is too, I mean, it would take me my entire show here, which is 3 hours. But nobody has any work requirements. I'm not opposed to social welfare benefits if people need them. I'm not. But they're not forever. You help people get back on their right, get them back on their feet, and then get them job. These are able-bodied people that are eligible for this stuff, Senator Cramer. I mean, that's right.
And able-bodied is the key point that you just made. And by the way, the standards in previous workfare programs were not super high in terms of what able-bodied is. There are age limits. There's obviously if you have a disability, there are issues that have to be considered. You know, but and standards have to be considered. But you know, one of the favorite politicians from North Dakota, because we claim him because he came here and lived here and ranched here, and his presidential library is being built here, is Theodore Roosevelt. Wow. And when he wrote about and talked about his time in Medora, North Dakota, in his autobiography, he refers to the hardy life, and he called it ours was the glory of work and the joy of living. Mm. We do not talk enough about the glory of work, the joy of work.
That's wonderful.
Right? With lifting people up means not just lifting them up economically, it means lifting them up personally, socially, you know. And we've just created this incentive, to your point. If there's no end, if there's no limit to the welfare, why would anybody work? And that's exactly the direction we're headed. Gets back to my productivity challenge.
What did he say? TR said the glory. You call it the glory of work?
Ours was the glory of work and the joy of living.
Wow. I love
that. That was his ranch life. Yeah, his ranch life in North Dakota. It's chapter 4, if anybody wants to read it, the cowboy life in North Dakota in his autobiography.
Yeah. You know, I forgot about the North Dakota.
Yeah.
I always thought of him as South Dakota.
No. Well, that's because he's got a great big head carved into a beautiful mountain.
But wait, where the Badlands were in North Dakota?
Yeah, the North Dakota Badlands, Theodore Roosevelt National Park. It's the only national park named after an individual. Huh. So I've got some wonderful opportunities for you to come out there and do your show in the beautiful setting of the Badlands. It also happens to be the heart of oil country.
Well, I know that. So you're going to give me a ride out there. We're going to do it, by the way. We're going to do that show.
We're going to do this before the end of the summer if it's the last thing I do.
No, I'm going to do it. Maybe stay a day or two. Have some fun. I've never been to North Dakota. Never. Never set foot.
Well,
I've been to South Dakota.
We're going to make it a memorable trip.
I once gave a speech to Pierre. That's in South Dakota, right? Pierre.
Yep, that's the capital of South Dakota, yeah.
Right, I knew that. Of course, my saintly wife and I were married in Montana. She's from Montana. We know all about Montana. That's why I wanted to shoot the balloon down in Montana, because there are no people living there.
Well, with our luck, if they shot the balloon down over Montana, it would hit one of those 8.5 people per square mile.
Well, that's right. I had Steve Daines on, he's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
And he was trying to tell me stuff about Montana. I said, Senator, forget about it. I know all about Montana. Oh, you can there's no speed limit. You could drive for hours and not see a human being in Montana.
It's a big place. There's no question about that, but it is beautiful.
It's probably true for North Dakota, too. I don't know anything about
it. It's similar. It's similar. It's not, it's not as mountainous, but the Badlands are spectacular.
Wow.
And the topsoil is rich, and underneath the soil are these beautiful minerals. God gave it all to us. It's as beautiful as can be, and we'd be irresponsible if we didn't use it all. For the benefit of mankind.
The glory of work and the joy of living. Terrific stuff. Yeah. Senator Kevin Cramer, thank you, sir. You are the best of the best. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side of the break, I think we're going to have John Carney of Breitbart talk about this bank in Silicon Valley.